Okay, good evening. Evening, everybody. Broadcasting live. January 17th. I was thinking about these online hangouts, and it would be nice to have an actual hangout where people came on and talked. If they had questions, they could come on. There's some problems, you know. Not everyone's awake at that time, and people in Europe. So for a lot of people to only have one opportunity to ask questions, it's not the greatest time. But the format as it is isn't the best either. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't want to ask questions in public. No. We need, if we could have a group, kind of like what we do on Mumble, but maybe just talk about the Dhamma or something. Something to think about. Think about how to best use the technology. Anyway, I'll keep making YouTube videos. There's always that. So today's quote is about householders. I think the most immediately interesting thing about this quote for me is I sometimes wonder whether people get the wrong impression about Buddhism from me, people like me. Being a Buddhist monk, I mean, I know here at McMaster, a lot of people think I'm a representative Buddhist, so that all Buddhists wear clothes like this, or that maybe I'm just a zealous sort of Buddhist. A lot of people don't realize that I'm actually an ordained Buddhist monk. So when I talk to them about the sort of rules that I keep, I found myself, to my surprise, having to tell them that, you know, that's not what all Buddhists do. Not all Buddhists only eat in the morning, or not all Buddhists don't touch money, that kind of thing. And I wonder whether sometimes meditators, though they don't fall in, they you know, people following me know that I'm a Buddhist monk, but whether there's still the idea that somehow they should try to emulate the monastic life. And as honorable as that is, there's, I think it misses some of the reality of life that even a Buddhist monk has to face. I mean, even I have to find a way to get my requisites, if that means finding a tree to find shade under, or if it means someone offering me a place to stay in a hut or something, or maybe in a cave, or if it means monks getting together and building a monastery. There are still requirements, and going for food every day, and going into the village, it's a far cry from what lay people have to do, but the reality is still there. And so I get the feeling sometimes people, because meditation effectively ends a lot of ambition as far as, you know, being successful in a worldly sense, and it's often down on the idea of worldly success, or it seems to be, that people often become inert. You know, they lose their ability really to function in society. Right, because, well, the desire to work is gone, so why go to work? Well, for obvious reasons, you need to live, right? But they have a hard time maybe getting out and applying for jobs and so on. Which I think is pretty silly. Why silly? Because a meditator is so much more efficient than a non-meditator, all other things being considered. I mean, given a person before they meditate and after they start doing mindfulness meditation, there's so much, it's a complete different night and day, that they should have no trouble finding a job, working at a job, keeping a job, because they're honest and trustworthy and all these things. They make the best employee. I mean, when I came back from Asia, I went to stay in a monastery, so I did the whole not working thing, which by all means, if you can find a way to live in the monastery, that's awesome. But we shouldn't disregard the necessity to work. Because, I mean, I did this when I needed to survive and I wanted to get away to go to Thailand, you know. I was set on going back and eventually becoming a monk. So I went tree planting and spent 10 hours a day, and I was not a physical person. I've never been a terribly physical person. I guess I was in good health, good shape physically. But not at the top, but I was at the top when we did tree planting, because I could just push myself. I had none of the baggage that other people were carrying around. I was able to focus and be mindful. And then we went blueberry picking. I found a way to make money. You know. I mean, this quote is about happiness that lay people find, and I think it could be kind of strange to hear the Buddha talking. It's at least refreshing to hear him talking about these things that are on probably many people's minds, those people who are not monastic people. You know, how he talks about not being in debt and having the ability to enjoy the things that you have. You know, to have things. Ownership is a sense of happiness, to not be without or be destitute. So the first two, the happiness of ownership and the happiness of wealth. These are very mundane. I mean, these are not very Buddhist happinesses, and we all know that in the end they're not satisfying. But there's a recognition of them, and I think that's important. It's important that they're not evil in the sense of blocking our practice. They'll drag you down, and for sure the attachments are a problem, but much more important is learning than denying. You know, so if you have desires or attachments, it's important that you learn about them. Now, by all means, if you can do that without these things, I guess I'm not really promoting them. What I'm trying to say is that there's a danger potentially of not being able to function, you know, and not being able to, you know, deciding to give up meditation maybe, because it stops you from, you think it stops you from functioning in society, because it makes you, that you lose your ambition. It makes you inert. But in fact, the point is you don't need ambition to work. You just need wisdom, really. And simple wisdom, wisdom that tells you if you don't work, you don't eat. Meditation should help you with that. I mean, I think there's a potential in the beginning for it not to, for you to not, you to get just caught up in the ramifications of the meditation, that everything is without meaning and purpose and so on, and just on a very superficial level accept this idea of meaninglessness. A deep understanding of meaninglessness allows you to work, allows you to do many things, because you do it as just the right thing to do at the time. You know, it's not the right thing to do to sit around and do nothing. It's not the right thing to do necessarily. Not all the time. So that's, I mean, that's not really what the Buddha's getting at, but I thought that was an interesting point for us to accept, for people to accept being a layperson. I mean, it goes without saying that without some kind of support group, you know, people who are able to bring resources to the Buddhist community. You know, monastics, we couldn't all be living in a monastery because we don't grow food in the monastery, and there's many things that we can't get in the monastery. So I mean, we're walking. It'd be great if everyone could just come. And we have the story of Damia. He's a prince who went forth. A very awesome story. For 16 years he pretended to be useless, so they were going to kill him, and they brought him out to the forest, and then he just got up and walked away. But then everybody followed him, the whole city, the king and the queen and everybody in the whole city. It's a wonderful story. I haven't done it justice by that description at all, but just the point that in the end they wind up building a city in the forest, a monastery, and everybody, the whole city, the king, the queen, the prince, and all the court and all the citizens, they all follow Damien into the forest. And they basically move the city to live in the forest. So unless that happens, there's we need to, I mean, there's great support that can be done. It's just if the difference is sitting around doing nothing, feeling kind of depressed, or you know, maybe causing friction with your family and so on, and just going out and doing and working, you know, like doing a job where you can be mindful and making some money to support yourself. There's it's certainly not against Buddhism. not in the larger sense, for sure. Of course, a more obvious aspect of this quote is the kind of the hinting at an emphasis on the mind. When he thinks of this, he feels happiness and satisfaction. That's repeated with for each of them. When you think of these things, so happiness is very much a mental thing. It isn't really based on your physical accommodations or possessions or so on. Happiness is very much in the mind, and so blamelessness is really the most wonderful form of happiness. And that's the one, the fourth, it's like a build-up. Ownership is good, but, you know, wealth is better. The ownership of valuable things, maybe. And that's good, but freedom from debt is even better. And that kind of speaks of karma. This is the kind of debt, karmic debt as well. But better than freedom from debt is, well, I guess the fourth one is more like karmic debt. Freedom from blame, having done nothing wrong. That's for sure the best of these four. And a person who's free from blame is enlightened for me. In an ultimate sense, but in a conventional sense, just means when a person has no real crimes or faults, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie, don't take drugs or alcohol, then there's, don't gamble, and there's very little you can, and they feel happy about that, you know, they feel confident. It's a confidence that thieves and murderers don't have. There's a happiness and a peace that comes from that. It's an interesting quote, as all the Buddhist teachings are. Anyway, if that's all for tonight, thank you all for tuning in. Have a good night.